No, no, the woman with a clipboard said, stepping in from the doorway to speak to the makeup artist. Stu wants the scar. Don't cover the scar. They love it. Josh looked nervously at the makeup artist's expression of surprise, wondering if she too worried that they were making him out to be some kind of freak. Oh, she said. Sure. As the makeup artist began to paint Josh's face with several types of makeup, brush his eyebrows, and dust him up with powder, Josh tried not to breathe the strange-smelling stuff through his nose. His stomach clenched, and he cast a worried look at Jaden. He expected her to grin at the silliness of him getting made up, but she didn't seem to notice. Her eyes were on Mickey Jr., and when Josh compared his own scarred face in the mirror to Mickey's, he remembered Stu Lisson's words about a monster movie. Before Josh knew it, they were being shuttled into the studio, where Bob Costas sat at a table studying the papers in front of him. Josh took the remaining seat around the dark granite-topped table. An audio person clipped a microphone to his shirt collar, running the wire down through his shirt and around his pants before plugging it into a small battery pack that he'd clipped to Josh's belt. The set, a raised platform covered with carpet, was an oasis of light in a forest of huge cameras, bare metal beams, and a tangle of cables. Josh stared around at the hot white lights and tried to swallow, even though his tongue, dry and sticky, seemed to have swollen to twice its usual size. Suddenly, Bob Costas upended his papers and tapped their bottom edges against the table as he looked at Josh and Mickey Jr. "You guys ready?" he asked. Josh stared back at the famous announcer's serious face and penetrating eyes. His throat started to tickle, and before he could nod or say yes, he began to cough. The woman with the clipboard rushed out from behind the bright lights and handed him a bottle of water. Josh drank half of it down and realized he had to use the bathroom. "Okay now?" Bob Costas asked with real concern. "You look a little nervous. Just relax. You'll be fine." Josh nodded, even though the last thing he felt was fine. Bob Costas said to someone beyond the lights, "Can someone bring a bucket?" Josh's stomach churned, and he tasted the roast beef and cheese as it gurgled up from his belly on a wave of soda. Chapter 38. Josh heaved his lunch into a waste paper basket with a mighty spatter. He choked and coughed, heaved again, then took a swig from his water bottle to wash the vile taste from his mouth. He wiped the corners of his lips on the back of his wrist. The makeup artist hurried onto the set with a wet towel, dabbing his face before reapplying the powder. Josh felt his face flush with embarrassment. He glanced over at where Jaden stood, knowing it was her only by the jeans and pink polo shirt. The bright lights blotted out her face, and he worried at what her expression must be, but not for long. Bob Costas introduced both Josh and Mickey Jr. in glowing terms, then started asking questions as if nothing unusual had happened. Mickey Jr. too carried on as if the three of them were hanging around the kitchen table. Josh watched in wonder as the two of them chatted. When a question came his way, he struggled to choke out a couple words, and his face only grew hotter. After several minutes, Stu Lisson walked out onto the set, interrupting Bob and kneeling beside Josh so he could speak into his ear. "Hey," Stu said in a pleasant whisper, "we love the scar and the whole story behind it, but you gotta leave it alone, okay? Maybe sit on your hands." "Oh, sure," Josh said, nodding fervently, dropping his hands and parking them under his legs, mortified that he'd been picking at his face without even knowing it. "Okay, great," Stu said, standing up with a wink and a thumbs up. "Doing good, Josh. Breathe deep." Josh nodded some more and tried to follow the advice he remembered Jaden had given him and now the producer, too. "Okay," Bob Costas said, looking up into the lights. "Rolling again?" Bob Costas touched his ear, nodded, and started in again, asking questions and looking, just as Jaden had said he would, right into Josh's and Mickey Jr.'s brains at the wheels. Josh knew his own wheels were rusty and broken down, especially when asked to speak about the heroic operation he had in order to play in the national championship. Then, flustered as he was, Josh suddenly understood that his role in the interview was one of the hopeless underdog and not the baseball rival. As Mickey Jr. finished explaining why the Comets were such huge favorites to win, Josh straightened his back and raised his chin. "Well, Josh," Bob Costas said, turning to him when Mickey Jr. had finished, "it'll be a tall order for your Titans to stand up to the Comets."
"With all due respect, Mr. Costas," Josh said without wavering, "talk is cheap, and champions are like blue moons. They don't come around much. Me and the rest of the Titans are planning on winning the big one."
Bob Costas paused for a moment, then blinked before a smile crept onto his face.
"Well said, Josh. That's why we play the game, right? To see who that champion is going to be."
"He doth protest too much," Mickey Jr. said, smirking.
"Quoting Shakespeare now, Mickey?"
Bob Costas said, obviously enjoying the literary reference.
"What do you mean?"
"Josh is busy telling us how they plan on winning the big one," Mickey Jr. said, "because he knows he's the underdog."
"I'm okay with being an underdog," Josh said, his chin still high. "This country was built by underdogs. It's as American as baseball and apple pie."
Bob Costas beamed. "Oh, yes." Mickey Jr. seemed at a loss before he said,
"That was then. This is now."
"Right," Josh said, feeling himself run out of clever things to say.
"But now America stands alone," Mickey Jr. said, grinning at himself as he gained the upper hand once again. "We're the only superpower left in the world. They say every dog has its day. Well, the underdog had its day already. Now we live in an age of champions, dynasties, and superpowers, and that's what the Comets are."
Bob Costas gave Josh a second to say something, but when it became clear he had nothing left to add, the famous announcer wished them both luck. As the audio man unclipped his microphone, Josh breathed a sigh of relief, thinking that at least he'd gotten a couple things right. The flight back to Cooperstown was a blur, but with every passing minute, Josh's clever words seemed to fade as the faltering end of the interview took center stage in his mind. Josh spent the trip with his head hanging low between both hands. He had a headache and used that as his excuse not to talk. Everyone left him alone, either out of thoughtfulness or a lack of concern, and to Josh it didn't matter. The most uncomfortable part was when he rode alone with Jaden in the back of the limo. She tried to talk to him a couple times and even spoke with encouragement about how they could edit the show to keep only the best of his answers. Josh couldn't even respond. The smell of vomit, his stumbling words, and, in the end, his inability to even speak haunted him. Finally, Jaden gave up trying, and they stared out their separate windows as the long car rolled through the countryside's fading light. Somehow the pressure seemed less after he mumbled goodnight to Jaden and she disappeared down the gravel path toward her cabin. Josh watched her go, his mind now turning to the game and how they might win it despite the odds. He'd need to be at his best, and as he replayed his finest moment in the interview and Bob Costas's reply about why they played the game, Josh took heart. When he went into his own cabin, Josh did his best to answer his parents and Benji's questions, but used the same headache to make quick work of them. His dad was kind enough not to say, "I told you so," as Josh recounted how bad things had really gone, except for his last answer. When he finally closed the door to his tiny cabin bedroom, Josh climbed up into his bunk and lay staring at the ceiling. The door opened quietly, and Benji lay down on the bottom bunk without a word. Josh waited for several minutes before he spoke.
"You don't have to stay with me," Josh said, even though Benji's presence somehow comforted him.
"Ah, that's okay," Benji said. "You can only watch so many campfires and eat so many s'mores. My hair's starting to smell like smoke."
"I liked how you said you ended that thing with Costas, the stuff about talk being cheap."
Josh smiled in the dark.
Anyway, Benji said brightly, forget about all that TV stuff. We got a game to play on Sunday, right? We're in the championship. Who knows if Mullet Head Mullen will even get there? They got to win tomorrow. We're already in.
Josh sighed and said, they seem pretty confident.
I'd be confident too if I had the umpire in my back pocket, Benji said.
Hopefully with Jaden's help we can put a stop to all that, Josh said. But even in the small dark bedroom, just him and his best friend, the words sounded weak and without meaning.
Chapter 39. The next morning, Saturday, Josh, Benji, Josh's dad, and the entire team went to watch the other semifinal game together. The Comets faced a dynamite team from Houston called the Rough Riders, and it wasn't easy to find a seat. They had to climb all the way to the top corner of the bleachers in the section dominated by Houston fans. TV cameras were everywhere. Because the Comets were saving Mickey Jr. to pitch in what they hoped would be the championship game, two of their other pitchers shared duty on the mound. Meanwhile, Mickey Jr. played first base. At first, it seemed to Josh that Seavers was allowing the Comets pitchers a much bigger strike zone than the team from Houston, and from the shouts and jeers of the Houston fans around him, Josh knew he wasn't the only one who thought so. But the advantage was a subtle one, and Jaden's words about baseball fans always complaining about the calls when they were losing came into Josh's mind. It was funny, but the most conclusive proof they had of cheating was Myron's reaction to what Josh had seen. As the score began to widen, the strike zone for the Comets' pitchers seemed to shrink. The Comets had a powerful offense led by Mickey Jr., who hit two singles, one of them earning an RBI, and even a home run with two runners on. Before the end of the fourth inning, the Comets enjoyed an 8-3 lead. Josh ached to see something amiss, but had to admit to himself that in the fifth and sixth innings, Seavers called an even game. Still, the Houston team could only score two additional runs, and even though it looked like the Rough Riders might rally, the Comets won 8-5, making it official. Sunday's final game for the Hall of Fame trophy and the national championship would take place between the LA Comets and the Syracuse Titans.
Well, it's the rivalry they all wanted to see. You against Mickey Mullen Jr. HBO's got to be happy, Josh's dad said before turning his attention to the notebook he had in his lap and jotting down some final thoughts that Josh knew he'd process later when he was developing his strategy for the championship game. As they sat waiting for the crowd to disperse and the teams shook hands over home plate, Benji leaned toward Josh, pointing at the far dugout, and in a whisper said,
look at her. Can you believe this? Another one.
Josh followed Benji's finger to see Jaden sitting by herself in the Comets dugout, writing what Josh guessed would be some final thoughts in her notepad. Benji removed a copy of the Post Standards sports page from the day before that he'd kept rolled up in his back pocket and slapped it against the bleacher's wooden seat. It was the page from that morning with a big color picture of Mickey Mullen Jr. on it. Another photo, the size of a postage stamp, showed the smiling face of Jaden, the author of the big story about Mickey Jr. and his no-hitter.
We get into the championship game, Benji said with a growl, and all she can write about is Surfer Boy.
You don't see many no-hitters, Josh said, doing his best to stay positive, forcing himself not to think of Jaden as a double agent, despite her focus on Mickey Jr.'s achievement from 2 days ago.
With that guy's strike zone, you do, Benji said, with a grunt at the umpire who was leaving the field. I could throw a no-hitter if he was on my payroll. What's she gonna do when this tournament is over? Move to Hollywood? When we're all home and she comes crawling back, I promise you she gets no sympathy, right?
Benji nudged Josh in the ribs.
Right?
I don't know, Benji, Josh said, tugging at his cap. Sometimes you have to have blind trust. Move on. My mom's always saying it's better not to carry bitterness around with you. It's like poison that gets in your blood.
Well, my blood's good and red,
Benji said, digging his paw into a box of popcorn and filling his face.
What's that got to do with it? Josh asked.
Like a red-blooded American, Benji said through a mouthful of corn.
Yeah? And?
Josh said, looking at him quizzically, wondering what the connection was, until he realized there was none.
Well, Josh said to Benji, standing up to get out of there and ready to change the subject. It's official. Titans versus Comets for the national championship.
Bring it on, Benji said. Josh nodded, then winced as Mickey Jr. returned from a swarm of cameras to the dugout. He slapped his famous father a high five, then gave Jaden a hug. As Josh watched, the evil thoughts crept back into his mind. Chapter 40. Josh and Benji let Josh's dad block for them as they navigated through the crowd toward the parking lot. As they funneled past the fence next to first base, Benji stopped and pointed to the sky.
Look,
he said. Josh shaded his eyes and looked up for the source of a thundering noise that grew louder by the second. The windows of a tar-black helicopter glinted like diamonds as the aircraft floated down toward the outfield. When it landed, Josh did a double take at what he saw. Crouched behind Mickey Mullen, Mickey Jr., and Myron was Jaden, scurrying beneath the spinning blades and hopping into the helicopter with the rest. A couple of cameramen and photographers spilled out onto the field to get a shot as the big bird whined and lifted itself off the grass. The wind from the helicopter swept dust from the baseline into their eyes and mouths. Benji coughed dramatically and swatted the air in front of his face.
What the heck was that? Benji asked. I thought you and her were on good terms again.
We are.
Benji squinted up at the copter as it leveled off and whooshed away in the direction of town.
Not as good as Mickey Jr., I guess. At least until you can give her a helicopter ride, huh?
Josh's father had stopped to watch along with everyone else, and he gave Josh a wave with his head and continued on through the enormous crowd. They got onto the team bus with the rest of the Titans and waited in the hot, dusty traffic as the lot emptied out onto Route 28. Josh's dad stood up in front of the bus and asked,
What does everyone think? Into town to catch the sights, or back to the camp for some swimming? I'd like to have some batting practice, but I think we'll wait until tomorrow morning and get our groove for the finals tomorrow afternoon.
Almost everyone agreed that they'd rather go back and swim, so despite Josh's pleading, the bus headed away from town when they reached Route 28.
Aren't you tired of the Hall of Fame? Josh's dad asked.
It's not just that, Josh said. It's the town. Ice cream, Doubleday Field, the shops. It's Cooperstown, Dad. It's the mecca of baseball.
No more souvenirs, Josh's dad said. Enough already. You can take the shuttle bus if you want to go that bad.
Dude, Benji said, can we give it a rest? I am so sick of that old bag's face. Let's swim.
Josh didn't say anything. He reached up into the luggage carrier and pulled a copy of Watership Down from his bat bag before sitting down in the window seat.
You're just going to sit there and read about rabbits? Benji said with a look of disbelief as he took the seat beside Josh.
Josh considered him for a moment before he said, If I tell you something, can you keep a secret for a change?
A change? Benji said, screwing up his face. I'm like the Sphinx, dude.
Josh blinked.
The Sphinx? You mean the Egyptian Sphinx, the monument that's guarded the secrets of the pyramids for thousands of years, right?
I mean, whatever keeps secrets like no one else, Benji said, raising his chin.
That's me.
Josh took a deep breath and said, Jaden and I have a plan.
What plan?
Benji asked.
The plan I want to tell you about, that I want you to keep secret.
When did you come up with a plan?
Benji asked.
The day you dumped your ice cream cone.
With Jaden?
Yes.
And you're not telling me until now?
Benji asked.
It's a secret.
Not from me, Benji said. You don't keep secrets from me.
I'm not. I'm telling you.
Because the plan has obviously failed, Benji said, poking his thumb in the direction of the sky where the helicopter had disappeared. Mainly because you didn't have the heavy hitter in on it. What were you thinking?
Josh told him how Jaden was supposed to be getting inside information so they could catch Myron in the act of paying off Seavers.
Benji cleared his throat and gave Josh a somber look. Did you ever think maybe she's just tricking us? Like a double agent? One of those spies who pretends to be on your side, but really they're spying on you?
Pretending to go along with us, but really protecting Mickey Jr.? Josh asked, shaking his head, even though he worried about the same thing.
Come on, Leto. She told me all about who the umpire is and why he's doing this.
That's what double agents do, Benji said. They give you a little bit here and there to keep you thinking they're on your side. What about that article she wrote in the Syracuse paper all about the Comets? I thought she was supposed to be here to do stories on our team. Heck, she and her dad rode the team bus down here with us.
She writes what they ask her for, Josh said.
Did they ask her to fly around in a helicopter with Surfer Boy? Benji said.
You don't think she'd lie to me just to keep me quiet, do you? Josh asked.
I don't think she'd do that, but then I see her with those guys and I don't know. I can't help getting this awful feeling that she's just tricking me.
Dude, women are capable of anything, Benji said. I told you that all along. You've got to know them to manage them properly. And can I be honest?
Josh nodded.
It's your face, Benji said somberly. That guy's looks like some Greek statue, and yours is like a Halloween mask.
Forget my face, Josh said. You want to win this thing, right?
Of course, Benji said. But I can't believe you kept this secret plan from me.
So what are we going to do? Josh asked.
You've got to tell your dad, Benji said.
No, Josh said, whispering and hushing Benji with a finger to his lips.
I told you, it's a secret.
But he could help,
Benji said in a whisper.
No, it would only make it worse, Josh said.
He told Benji the deal about Myron's threat to Josh's father, humiliating him in the media and destroying his sponsorship with Nike. If the Titans lost, they'd still have a chance at another one-year sponsorship, but if his dad's credibility was destroyed, everything would be ruined.
Why?
Benji asked.
It just would, Josh said. Stop asking.
Okay, then, Benji said, leaning close so Josh could hear him whisper.
Then there's only one thing we can do.
What? Josh asked. Chapter 41.
Go swimming, Benji said.
What? Josh asked, rumpling his face in disbelief.
How's that going to help?
Hey, we've got until tomorrow night at this place, Benji said.
No way can we win if they got the umpire in their pocket, and no way we can stop it with Jaden working like some double agent, so we swim. We relax and just play. Move on, like your mom says.
Are you crazy? Josh asked.
No, I'm very sane, Josh. When you're beat, you're beat.
Josh shook his head and opened his book.
Back to rabbits, huh? Benji said.
I see.
Rabbits who won't just quit, Josh said without looking up.
They didn't speak again until they were back at the camp.
Josh returned his bat bag to the cabin, then told his parents he was heading into town. Benji emerged from the bathroom in his Red Sox cap and a big yellow bathing suit with blue fish all over it. In his hand was a bright green Nerf football.
Let's hit the beach, Benji said, tugging on his cap.
Josh just turned and walked out the door, letting the screen door slam behind him. When Benji caught up, Josh didn't say anything.
Come on, Benji said. When we got off the bus, Esh told me his dad is grilling some sausages and peppers down by the water on one of those little grills. We can eat, swim, drink sodas. Come on, Josh. Carpet the D-end. Live a little.
Josh kept trudging and said, Carpe diem. It's Latin. It means seize the day.
Eat like a slob. Drink soda until you're sick. Lay around in the sun. Because who cares? Tomorrow might never come. But it might come, Josh said, stopping and turning on Benji. And if it does, I want to win that championship. I want us to walk away with that trophy because we're the best team and because my dad is the best coach. I know Mickey Mullen was a great baseball player, one of the greatest. I know he was way better than my dad. You should have seen the way that HBO producer looked at me when I said he was a pro player, like what he did in the minors was nothing. So my dad couldn't even be a rival to Mickey Mullen. But it wasn't nothing, and my dad is a better coach than Mickey Mullen. He's his rival there. Only my dad would never pay off an umpire just so he could win. I have a chance to stop that. Maybe not much of a chance, but a chance. So you go stuff your face and flop around in the water, but I'm going into town. I'm like the rabbits. I'm not taking the easy way. I've got a dream, and I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen.
Benji's mouth fell open.
Gee, you're making me feel like a schmuck.
Josh shrugged and headed for the shuttle. When the bus coughed to life in a cloud of purple smoke, Josh ran to catch it. He hopped up the steps, ignored by the cranky driver.
Oh, no, she said suddenly. Not on this bus. You get right off.
Josh spun around in surprise, only to see that the driver was talking to Benji, who climbed the steps in his yellow suit, Red Sox cap, and bare feet, wearing nothing else besides the Nerf ball he used to cover his jiggling belly button.
My dad said he talked to you about us, Josh said.
Right, she said. You can ride, but not like that. Read the sign. No bare feet, must wear shirt, he's off.
Wait, Benji said. This is an emergency. We're like the rabbits in Watership Down, trying to save their whole warren from a huge disaster. You gotta let me on, lady. This kid needs me.
The driver twisted up her face and shook her head.
You're nuts.
How nuts is this?
Benji asked, removing his hat and showing the driver the Mickey Mullen signature on his cap.
Here, take it. You like Mickey Mullen?
The driver's lower lip flopped open and trembled.
This ain't real, she said.
Met him at the museum the other day, Benji said with a wink. All yours if you cut me a break.
The driver looked Benji up and down and sucked in her lower lip before she wagged her head toward the back.
Deal,
she said, swapping out her old Red Sox cap for the new one signed by Mickey Mullen. Josh slid over to the window, and Benji plunked down beside him with a huff.
Benji, you didn't have to do that,
Josh said quietly, feeling slightly guilty.
You think I want that cheater's autograph messing up a good Red Sox hat?
Benji asked, raising an eyebrow.
Nah.
You could have sold it, Josh said.
Yeah,
Benji said with a shrug.
I know.
How much was that worth, anyway?
Not that much, really, Benji said. Mickey Mullen must spend half his life signing autographs. I went online at the camp office, and there's about 10,000 signed caps for sale on the internet.
10,000? Without sweat stains, Benji said. Yours had a sweat stain?
I wore it to bed the other night.
That hot one? Benji said.
I think it was Wednesday. I couldn't get 10 cents for that stupid thing.
Josh smiled and patted Benji's bare shoulder. When they arrived at the drop-off in town, Benji asked,
So what's the plan?
They stepped off the bus and wandered down toward the marina. Josh couldn't help hoping he'd see Myron and Seavers at the restaurant again. He grew frustrated as Benji hopped along beside him, stepping gingerly on the grass, worried about getting a bee sting or stepping on glass in his bare feet. When they reached the parking lot, Benji stopped and stared.
I'm not walking across that, Benji said. It's like hot coals.
I'll be right back, Josh said, crossing the lot and wandering through the restaurant to no avail. As he left, his cell phone rang. It was Jaden. Chapter 42.
Can't talk, Jaden said in a hurried whisper, but get to the Otisaga by the pool.
Before Josh could say one word, the phone went dead.
He looked around, then hurried outside to Benji. Jaden called.
From where?
Benji said.
Did she helicopter all the way to California? Tell her to stay there.
She said get to the Otisaga, Josh said, and something about the pool.
Here, let me call her back, Benji said, reaching for Josh's phone. I'll tell her who can Otisaga and who can't.
No, Benji, Josh said, snatching the phone back.
Use your own phone.
I will, Benji said, pulling it free from his bathing suit pocket and holding it up.
I thought you were going swimming, Josh said.
I take it out of my pocket when I go in, Benji said.
Dude, stop sounding like a mother hen.
Otisaga means something, Josh said.
What?
Benji shrugged, replacing his phone after all, and said,
Sounds Native American to me.
It does, Josh said. But what? Benji pointed. Across the street and down the block a ways was a small white building with a sign that said, Visitor Information.
Good idea, Josh said.
Would you mind? Benji said, holding out his arms and wiggling his fingers.
Mind what?
Carrying me?
Man, Benji, Josh said, looking him over. You weigh half a ton and you're all sweaty, not to mention half naked.
Benji held up his foot and wiggled his toes.
You do not want these piggies to fry, dude. The heavy hitter needs to run free around the infield come tomorrow night. Come on, I gave up my Mickey Mullen Red Sox cap to help you. The least you could do is give me a little assistance.
You said you didn't even want that hat, Josh said, that it wasn't worth 10 cents. Benji folded his arms and looked away.
Okay, come on, Josh said, but you hang on to my neck and ride on my back. I'm not carrying you across like you're some princess bride.
Josh backed up and Benji slung his arms around his neck. Josh carried his friend across the hot pavement and they went inside the information place, where Josh asked the woman if she had any idea what Otisaga was.
Oh, it's a beautiful hotel just down the road, she said, pointing.
Right on the water. They have a golf course.
Shirts required, of course.
Benji adjusted the Nerf ball to block his belly button.
Do they have a pool?
Josh asked.
A heated one, she said, nodding.
When they stepped out onto the sidewalk, Benji asked,
Can we get something to eat first? I could go for a bag of cheeseburgers, but even an ice cream could fill the gap a little bit.
No, Josh said. We've got to get to the Otisaga. Jaden made it sound urgent. I'm not missing this chance. They walked up the street until they came to a light and had to cross again to get over the hot pavement to the lakeside, where the road ran out from the center of town. Benji opened his arms and tilted his head. Josh didn't complain. He just carted him across and they headed up the sidewalk. They walked by several old mansions before they saw the Otisaga rise up above the trees in front of them. Soon the whole thing came into view. Sitting atop a grassy knoll with the lake glittering beyond, the Otisaga was enormous. It reminded Josh of a fortress. The curving drive led to the covered entrance, where massive three-story columns supported the eaves of a roof capped off with an enormous cupola. A man wearing a tan uniform trimmed in dark green stopped them to ask if they were guests of the hotel. Josh thought quick.
Mickey Mullen Jr. invited us, he said. He said we should meet him by the pool.
The man straightened and said, Oh, I saw their helicopter land just a few minutes ago over on the golf course. I heard they had to go down to New York City to pick up some movie stars for the big party tonight. How about that?
Sure, go right on through. The pool is in the back.
Josh marched up the steps, with Benji following. They entered the elegant lobby, passing by the front desk with a wave and continuing on past the expensive furniture and straight out back to the circular deck.
Well, Benji said, looking around uncomfortably, we're here.
Now what?
She had to have a reason, Josh said. Maybe this is where they're doing it.
Doing what? Benji asked.
Making the exchange. Josh said. We need two things. The first is a picture of Myron handing Seavers the envelope.
Josh looked around. People passed them by in fancy summer clothes, men in slacks, women in flowery hats and high-heeled shoes.
A long, sweeping row of rocking chairs sat facing the sloping lawn, the expanse of the lake, and the mountains beyond. On the terrace below, people sat having poolside drinks beneath an army of broad umbrellas shading them from the sun.
"Hey," Josh said, "I just realized. We'll need to use your cell. I don't have a camera on my phone. Jaden's got one, and I didn't think I'd have to do this without her."
"Forget a picture," Benji said, beaming and withdrawing the cell phone from his flouncy shorts. "You can shoot a video with this thing. Good thing you got me."
"Yeah, it is," Josh said, accepting the phone with a smile.
"There's the pool," Benji said, pointing.
"Let's check it out. I feel like I stick out up here in the lobby with all these fancy-pants people."
"Nah," Josh said. "Those yellow swim trunks are great."
They descended the broad staircase, and as they did, Josh examined the crowd beneath the umbrellas. Halfway down the steps, he froze and grabbed Benji by the arm. In the shadow of an umbrella, sipping some kind of drink, Josh spotted Myron. Sitting across from him with a beer was Justin Seavers, the crooked umpire.
Chapter 43.
Josh grabbed Benji's arm and pointed.
"There! How are we going to get a shot from here?" Benji asked.
"We've got to get closer," Josh said, scanning the area and descending the final steps until they stood on the terrace.
"Here, come on."
Josh circled around the pool area. Surrounding the low rock wall was a hedge. Down near some trees, Josh looked around, then ducked into the narrow gap between the hedge and the wall, crawling on his hands and knees back around toward the table where he'd seen Myron and Seavers.
"Ow!" Benji said behind him. "These bushes are biting into me."
"Shh," Josh said, twisting around to glare at him.
"I'll go alone if you can't fit."
"I can fit,"
Benji said, hissing.
"I've got sensitive skin is all. You don't want me itching all over when I'm swinging for the fences, do you?"
"Oh, brother,"
Josh said, turning back around and continuing his crawl. When they got to Myron's table, Josh peeked his head up over the wall, then ducked back down quickly.
"What's the matter?"
Benji asked, bumping up behind him.
"I'm afraid they'll see me,"
Josh said, still whispering as he fumbled with the phone.
"Look,"
Benji said, pointing to the phone.
"Just hold it up and tilt the screen down. You can use it like a periscope."
Josh did as Benji said, and it was true. He could angle the phone so that by propping it just over the lip of the stone wall, he could see Myron and Seavers on the screen. After a while, though, his arm began to tremble with fatigue.
"I wish they'd just do it already," Josh said in a whisper. "Want me to take a turn?"
Benji said.
"I'm just sitting here like one of those garden gnomes and my stomach is going crazy. I need a distraction."
"Okay," Josh said. "Come closer and I'll just pass it off. Wait!"
Josh froze. In the tiny cell phone screen, he saw Myron reaching underneath the table. Josh pushed the button and started to record. Myron lifted the same kind of manila envelope he'd given Seavers before and handed it to him across the table. Seavers shook it and said something, and the two of them laughed together as Seavers slipped the envelope under his arm and stood to go.
"I got it," Josh said, barely able to contain the excitement. "Let me see,"
Benji said, groping.
"Don't break it, Benji,"
Josh said.
"Dude, it's my phone,"
Benji said.
"Don't worry." "I'm worried about what's on it,"
Josh said.
"Not the phone."
"Nice," Benji said, snatching it away and fumbling with the buttons.
"Let me see if you even got it. You may be the baseball great, but I'm a technology wizard. Oops."
"Oops," Josh said.
"What's oops, Benji?"
Benji held up a hand.
"Can we get out of these bushes? Even a wizard needs decent working conditions."
"Go,"
Josh said.
"I'll follow you."
Josh grumbled the entire length of the crawl, resisting the temptation of swatting Benji's big yellow butt as he waddled through the hedge. When they emerged into the shadows of the trees, Josh glanced over at the table where the exchange had taken place. Myron sat sipping his drink,
staring at the activity in the pool with a small grin on his face.
"I don't know if you did this right," Benji said.
"I did it right," Josh said, growing hot.
"You're the one who said oops." "I didn't say oops. I saw him handing over the envelope, and I hit the record button. Don't even tell me it's not on there, Benji."
Benji screwed up his face and poked the tip of his tongue out from the corner of his mouth as he fumbled with the phone keys.
"Yes," he said, holding it up. "Save the day."
"You ruined the day, then you saved it."
"Saved it all the same," he said.
"Let's see," Josh said. Benji played the video, and Josh felt a surge of pride.
"I got it," he said,
watching the video of Myron leaning over the table and handing Sievers the envelope.
"We got it," Benji said.
"We did. Now send it to Jaden's phone to back it up."
"You said we needed two things," Benji said, frowning. "What's the other?"
Chapter 44.
Someone cleared her throat behind Josh and Benji and said, "Now we need the envelope." Both boys spun around and spoke at the same time.
"Jaden?
Who did you think?" she asked.
"Not Mickey Mullen Jr.'s girlfriend," Benji said.
"Cut it out, Lido," Josh said.
"Dude, she rode in the guy's helicopter,"
Benji said. "And gave us the heads up on Myron's meeting with Sievers," Josh said. He clasped Jaden by the shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
"Did you get it?"
she asked.
Benji held up the phone with a nod. "Video. The whole thing. We just sent you a copy."
"You're big time, Lido," Jaden said, slapping his back. "Come on, let's get out of here."
Jaden kept looking over her shoulder as if she expected someone to be following them.
They darted between the trees and around the side of the massive hotel, winding through the landscaping, hurrying until they reached Lake Street.
"Okay," Benji said, tramping down the sidewalk toward town. "Now we've got to eat. You can't do this to me anymore. I'm starved. This is cruel and unusual punishment."
Josh and Jaden hurried along behind Benji. Jaden took out her phone.
"Who are you calling?" Josh asked.
"My dad," she said. "I got to check in. I don't want him worrying."
"What are you going to say?" Josh asked, but Jaden's call had already gone through and she held up her finger.
"Dad?" she said. "Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I met Anne Hathaway. She was nice. Mickey invited me to this big barbecue they're having at the Otisaga. A bunch of celebrities are going to be there. Anne Hathaway and Orlando Bloom. You don't mind if I go, right?"
Jaden nodded her head, then said,
"Thanks, Dad. You're the best."
Benji spun around. "Did you just say Anne Hathaway?"
Jaden said, "I guess she and Orlando were in New York doing a movie or something, and the Mick flew them in his jet. They're friends."
"Can I go to that thing?"
Benji asked.
"As your friend?"
"Now we are friends?"
Jaden asked, forcing a smile.
"Nice. Lido, the fair weather friend. Only I'm not going."
Benji's eyes widened.
"You just told your dad. Now you're lying to your dad? Dude, you are so changed. That's classic Hollywood."
"I didn't lie, Benji," she said, stamping her foot. "Tell me how I lied."
"You said you were going to that barbecue," Benji said.
"No, I said they were having a barbecue and that I was invited. All true. I asked if he minded if I went. He said I could. I never said I was."
Benji slapped Josh's chest with the backs of his fingers and said,
"You see what I was saying about women? Very dangerous."
Jaden hefted her phone at them and said,
"You guys better do the same thing. It's starting to get late, and you don't want your mom all worried and your dad hunting you down, right?"
Josh took out his own phone and pulled the same stunt with his mom as Jaden had with her dad, asking permission to go to the party at the Otisaga, saying Jaden had been invited and that she wanted them to hang out with her tonight. All true. They entered town and found Benji the cheeseburgers he'd been craving, eating on the sidewalk outside the Triple Play Cafe as the sun dropped behind the buildings and the shadows grew long. After emptying a bag of 2 triple cheeseburgers, fries, and a milkshake, Benji suggested a pit stop at Esposito's Italian ice cream. Jaden and Josh both rolled their eyes.
"We've got to get going," Josh said. "You had your food."
"Besides," Jaden said, "you don't want to be too weighted down. What if we have to run?"
"Run?" Benji said, catching up with them at the door.
"Why would we run? Where are we going?"
"You don't think Seavers is just going to give us that envelope filled with cash, do you?"
Jaden asked, stepping out onto the sidewalk.
"We've got to go get it."
"Wait, can't the police get it?" Benji asked. "Or some other grown-ups or something? I didn't think you meant us."
"Us," Jaden said, continuing to walk. Josh nodded.
"The police aren't going to do anything until we can prove they're paying off the umpire."
"Even then," Jaden said, "I don't think it's the police we go to. I think the only help we'll get is from the media. If we can prove it to them, it'll be a huge story. Then maybe someone will do something. The people at the Hall of Fame or the ones who run the tournament. I don't know if what they're doing is criminal, but it's just really, really wrong. No, we've got to go there by ourselves."
"Where's there?"
Benji asked, his voice sounding small.
"Josh didn't tell you?"
Jaden said.
"Seavers' place."
Chapter 45. Benji cleared his throat and said,
"Really, you guys, one of us should be at that barbecue in case either of your parents asks about it. I can go and give you guys a report. Look, it's going to be dark soon and the mosquitoes will be out. I don't even have a shirt. I got no shoes."
"Come on,"
Jaden said, leading them down the street to Pioneer Alley, where they walked into a gift shop. Benji watched in horror as Jaden removed a pair of pink rubber flip-flops from a plastic bin and placed them on the checkout counter along with a flimsy white t-shirt with SpongeBob wearing a Yankees cap on it. The total came to $7 and change. Jaden took the money from her pocket, paid, and handed the stuff to Benji.
"Shoes and a shirt," she said. "No more excuses. SpongeBob even matches your shorts."
"Pink sandals?" Benji asked.
"They're kind of cute," Jaden said.
Benji moaned, but dropped them onto the sidewalk and slipped them on along with the t-shirt.
"Great," he said, his words as glum as his expression. "Anne Hathaway's at the Otisaga, and I'm running around Cooperstown dressed like a Disneyland fairy."
Josh led his friends to the edge of town, where Seavers' place and other ancient homes backed up to the river. By the time they reached the gravel drive with its 2 small stone gateposts, the sun had disappeared behind the trees and the sky was fading to purple in the coming night. Heat still bled up from the pavement, but already the woods offered cool wafts of evening air.
"We're just going to walk right down the driveway?"
Jaden asked.
"No reason to get all cut up or lost in the woods," Josh said. "If we see headlights coming, we'll have plenty of warning, and we can hide in the trees."
They followed him along the winding drive where the overhang of trees made it quite dark and the gravel crunched beneath their feet. Jaden put a hand on Josh's shoulder, and Benji put his hand on the other one. A sudden clatter of sticks and a shriek made them all jump. Josh pulled himself together and said in a loud whisper,
"It's just a bird, an owl or something."
"I know that," Benji said.
It wasn't long before gloomy yellow blotches of light appeared through the trees. The leaves flickered in a small breeze, and the glow of the windows seemed to pulse with some inner heartbeat of the house, a monster crouching in the shadows. On the far side of the house, a window cast its beam on the low mound with its crumbling tombstones. The breeze carried with it the smell of the river's mud and something else, breath from the damp rot that ate away at the wooden house.
"Holy moly," Benji said, pointing. "Don't even tell me those are tombstones."
"Okay," Josh said. "I won't tell you."
"Because if some axe-murdering zombie comes blowing out of that house screaming at us,"
Benji said,
"I'm the one who'll go down. Sure, the heavy kid in the pink flip-flops. He's the one who caught the axe blade in the back of the head. Poor kid, he never stood a chance. I can hear it on the news right now."
There's no zombies,
Josh said, annoyed at the feeling of fright that had curled up in the corner of his stomach like a rodent. Just a weird, greedy, crooked umpire. They crept forward, heading for the house. They walked along, staring up into the lifeless windows. When they turned the corner at the rear of the house, they saw a flicker of light coming from a window that looked out onto the back porch. Josh crept up the steps, dodged past a couple of broken wicker chairs, and waved for them to join him at the window. Peering through the curtains, they saw Seavers slumped down on a couch in front of the TV, cradling a whiskey bottle against the fur on his naked chest.
"Looks like he's out of it,"
Jaden whispered. Josh nodded and led them back down the steps and around the other side of the house, where light spilled out from another window. When Josh got to the window, he reached up, grasped the sill, and did a chin-up so he could peek in.
"Holy moly," he said, peering through the screen. "There it is!"
Jaden and Benji gripped the slimy windowsill with their fingertips and hoisted themselves up as well so they could peek over its edge. In a small room with a musty-looking double bed and a floor lamp with no shade, a battered desk faced the opposite wall next to the door. On the desk, beside a cluster of empty beer cans, rested the manila envelope with fat stacks of green bills spilling from its mouth.
"Yeah, but what do we do now?"
Benji asked, his voice quavering. Chapter 46. Josh let go and dropped to the ground.
"What are we going to do?"
Jaden asked.
"We've got to think," Josh said. "We need a plan."
Benji and Jaden followed him, and they huddled up behind the tree. Josh studied the house in silence as the evening deepened into night. Suddenly, Benji pointed up at the peaks of the roof jutting into the early set of stars.
"Oh, gosh," he said. "Look, do you see?"
Josh narrowed his eyes and saw the flicker of wings darting and dabbing around the edges of the roof.